that gavel, I have just convened the Subcommittee on Transportation and Economic Development for March the 6th, 2017. We are gathered today for the purpose of a public hearing on House Bill 5025, the budget for the Oregon Business Development Department. And Mr. Bender, if you would introduce us to the agency and today's work, that would be dandy.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair and Subcommittee members. Good afternoon. Today, you're starting the first of 4 days of Phase 1 public hearings on the Oregon Business Development Department budget. We have more Phase 1 hearings scheduled for this budget than we will for any budget in your subcommittee except for ODOT. The reason for 4 days is this is a very complicated budget. The department houses a number of programs that are funded from a number of different sources. So it'll take some time for them to review their agency and budget with you. I would just like to point out a few things. I know the department is planning to take up has scheduled to use most of the time for today's hearing in their testimony, so I don't want to take up too much of your time right now. But if you are able to look at the LFO analysis that we posted on OLIS for this agency budget, you will note a number of interesting things about the agency. For one thing, they have numerous different fund types available. The agency is funded, some of the programs are funded by general fund or lottery funds, but a substantial amount of the programs are funded by other funds and, to a smaller extent, federal funds. The co-chairs in their budget framework looked at the agency's general fund and lottery fund programs in order to develop targets for the agency given the amount of resources that are currently available for the current biennium. The other funds programs are primarily funded by bond proceeds. And the bond proceeds also become part of your budget deliberations, but they're outside, or they're parallel with the general fund, lottery fund determinations on the budget, because the bond proceeds are issued within the limitations for bonding authority that the state has available, whereas the general fund and lottery fund appropriations are made within the amount of lottery funds and general funds that are forecast to be available. So the agency will be presenting a large number of a number of programs that are funded by from different fund types. Unless there are any questions, I'd be happy to turn it over.
Colleagues, questions? Please, the record should note that Senator Hansel is testifying on a bill and will rejoin us when he's done. So with that, we're going to invite Mr. Harder up and Team OBDD in whatever batting order you have arranged. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Co-Chair Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, committee members, for the record, I'm Chris Harder, Director of the Oregon Business Development Department, also known as Business Oregon. Thank you for the opportunity to provide a detailed overview of our agency today and the important role we play in statewide economic development. We look forward to the presentation and discussion with you this week. Over the next 4 days, we will comprehensively cover the agency. Our four-day agenda is included on the screen. It is worth noting that two topics we will discuss this week, but are prepared to cover in more detail during phase two of our presentation to this committee, likely in April or May, are the Oregon Innovation Council and Regional Solutions. Other topics will likely emerge from phase one as well. Today, our goal is to provide an overview of the agency, with details on the governor's recommended budget, proposed policy option packages, and reduction impacts. Time permitting, we are also prepared to cover two of our programmatic areas. Throughout the course of our presentation, I'll be asking key leaders and subject matter experts from the organization to join me up here and assist with the presentation. Before we walk through our budget details, I would like to set some context for the agency and provide an overview of the factors we consider when making investments. Our vision at Business Oregon is prosperity for all Oregonians. We seek to accomplish this by strategically investing in Oregon communities, businesses, and people to promote a globally competitive, diverse, and inclusive economy. How we approach this work is both broad and deep. It includes rural community development and infrastructure financing, business retention and expansion, export promotion and international trade, investments in research and development, as well as high growth startups, technical assistance to small businesses, and support for arts and cultural organizations. Led by the Oregon Business Development Commission, Business Oregon works in partnerships with our various boards and commissions. Their roles range from strategic oversight of the agency to financial and technical guidance related to particular initiatives, programs, or core bodies of work.
And I'm going to interrupt you there long enough to just put on the record that I serve at the pleasure of the Senate President as a non-voting member of that commission.
Thank you. The agency views the leaders of our boards and commissions as welcome advisors and trustees of our vision and mission. This past fall, Business Oregon leadership announced an agency realignment. The goal of the agency alignment were threefold. First, to break down internal division silos and establish a one-agency framework. Second was to enhance service delivery to better meet the needs of our stakeholders and customers, particularly those in our work in regions around the state. And third, to increase operational flexibility related to both new resources or budget reductions. In short, we identified and implemented changes to improve how we organize to conduct our work, all with the goal of providing enhanced level of service and maximum impact. The org chart you will see on the screen reflects our new structure. Business Oregon is structured around four divisions: economic development, operations and finance, equity strategies and communications, and arts and culture. We will spend a considerable amount of time this week focused on the Economic Development Division, as that is the team responsible for the vast majority of our external-facing programs and services. We will also use this org chart often over the next 4 days to ground you in our key programs and initiatives and communicate where they live within the agency. Economic development is a dynamic field. Over time, Business Oregon has successfully demonstrated the ability to respond to new challenges, new opportunities, and new economic development approaches. This slide provides an overview of some of the programmatic changes, or in many cases, additions, the legislature has asked the agency to manage over the years. Expanding roles related to arts and culture, infrastructure finance, and innovation and industry incentives. Two of my colleagues in a little bit will cover in their budget presentation several new programs under consideration during this session. What we've often lacked at Business Oregon is a strategic plan that unites our work and establishes a shared vision. With the completion of our comprehensive strategic plan, which we will roll out this year, likely in the summer, we are looking to be proactive and not reactive in responding to changing economic needs. Our strategic plan will identify priorities and core investment opportunities, as well as establish clear goals and objectives for the agency. This effort will also update our success metrics to help us to better evaluate and report on our impact. To fully understand our agency, it's important to ground the conversation in the current dynamics of our economy. According to a recent headline in Bloomberg News, Oregon is the picture of economic health. The article goes on to state that Oregon had the best performing economy in the nation, measured by employment, home prices, personal income, tax revenue, and the publicly traded equity of our companies. Additional data to consider. Oregon is a leader in personal income growth, We were top 10 in the U.S. this past year. Our gross domestic product between 2014 was the best in the country, and our manufacturing output was second overall. Clearly, we still know how to make things. We benefit from Pacific Rim trading advantages. In 2016, we exported close to $22 billion worth of goods, the most ever. Workers see Oregon as a place of opportunity. Our quality of life and our available job opportunities attract talent. We were the top destination for movers between 2013 and 15, and third last year in 2016. Oregon recently ranked the sixth most innovative state in the U.S., measured by factors such as research and development intensity, science, technology, engineering, and math employment, and patent activity. We are a top 10 state in terms of startup seeking venture funding. And the state has 108,000 more jobs than our pre-recession peak in November of 2007. And last year, we added close to 50,000 jobs alone. Our unemployment rate is at historic lows at 4.3%.
Mr. Harder, I'm going to interrupt you and channel our missing colleague because I know he would ask this question were he here. This paints a wonderful picture of Oregon on the rebound from economic crisis. Speak a little bit to your agency's acknowledgement of what's happening still in rural Oregon, because these rosy pictures are not reflective of places that I represent, certainly that Senator Hansel represents, Representative Reardon, Representative Gomberg. Talk to us a little bit about your thoughts on the rest of Oregon, because this ain't all of it.
Absolutely. Actually, the next four slides will speak to that directly. So as Co-Chair Johnson mentioned, this is a good narrative and one that we're proud of and we can build from, but we believe at Business Oregon is in an incomplete picture of our economic health and competitiveness. So I don't think it's anyone's surprise that we are experiencing an uneven recovery here in Oregon. Portland, Bend, and the Willamette Valley regions, represented by the top three lines, or the blue, the yellow, and the red lines, are growing fast, creating high-paying jobs, attracting talent, and leading on innovation. In all other areas, the state is at or below pre-recession employment levels, and rural Oregon faces continued challenges, particularly with the decline in natural resources employment. So what does this look like on the ground? In Klamath County, like most other rural Oregon counties, they haven't recovered from the Great Recession. In fact, it's still 9% below peak pre-recession employment levels, and according to the Oregon Employment Department, it won't reach that level until 2024. The story is the same demographically as it is geographically. For example, African American unemployment is about twice as high as the Oregon average, and the median household income of our Native American population is approximately two-thirds the state average. Several other economic challenges exist. As a state, we continue to struggle to create family wealth. Household income at $44,000 continues to lag the U.S. at $48,000, a trend that has persisted for decades. We continue to be concerned about our ability to educate the next generation workforce. We have the nation's third highest high school dropout rate. And as our state continues to transition to a knowledge-based economy, educational attainment becomes increasingly important. Our job growth, which we highlighted earlier as a strength, continues to favor low-wage, low-skill, and high-wage, high-skill workers. The result is the continued decline of accessible middle-wage jobs.
I'm Co-Chair.
I'm sorry, Representative.
That's quite all right. wanted to go back to your graph on how we are approaching our that graph. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at the titles along the left-hand side, and I believe those line up with the titles of our various economic regions.
That's correct.
Which would go to say that, for example, in my own district, that Lincoln County and Linn County is paired together with Benton and Lane, which means that our coastal or Cascade Range communities are lumped together with Corvallis and Eugene. How do I get a clearer picture of what's going on in the non-metropolitan portions of our economic regions?
We could certainly follow up with that level of detail, perhaps on a county level. We do produce reports within the agency that provide a more kind of nuanced regional look, and we can share those with you as well. But I think it is, to build off what you're saying, it is our non-kind of metro areas that are really struggling in this environment at the time. And that would include, you know, the difference between Lincoln City and Corvallis and Eugene.
Thank you.
Yeah.
A follow-up. Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Reardon. Actually, one more thing before you leave this slide, if you'll excuse me, Representative Reardon. You said Bend was doing well. How come Central, with the yellow line, seems to... I just answered my own question. Representative Reardon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Johnson. And, Chris, I just wanted to make a point here. And I got the information from you folks, so it shouldn't come as a surprise. But when we say Portland Metro, that's a very broad term. Yeah. And Portland Metro is doing well. But if you go east of 82nd, where it's like 49% people of color, it's a highly concentrated area of poverty. So east of 82nd, Metro, or Multnomah County, Gresham, Troutdale, all of that area is performing way less. So I call it my community of concentrated poverty. So I just want to make that point. One point is that information is available. It can be made available and it can be very precise. But Portland Metro is not all the same. So.
Thank you. Representative Noble.
Thank you, Chair. This is great, just as far as, I mean, even though a lot of it is in the Valley or Central Oregon, Portland, I believe in the economy as well, tends to go in cycles.
Yeah.
And have you done any forecasting with the what you believe economic development is going to be doing, looks like in the next, say, 5 years? Since 5 years ago, we were pretty poor, and then we were up, and then you go back to 2003, and there was a recession and some job loss. Have you done, or do you have with you, I'm sure you have, done it, whether you have anything that, or you can comment on what the next 5 to 10 years looks like with regard to the economy or specifically jobs?
We haven't done any kind of predictive analysis that would suggest when we anticipate a downturn. I think other agencies within the state are probably a little bit better from having the economic staff to do that. I think you're correct in stating that all economies go through a business cycle, and we've been on a pretty good run. So it wouldn't surprise me sometime in the next couple years we start to dip down. And how do we respond to that is up to our agency. I'm going to talk a little bit about our strategic planning, and that's probably the next slide I'll talk about, which kind of pulls in some of these factors, structural changes we see happening in our economy and how we want to focus the resources that we have around those things. So I think that may answer some of it, but we can follow up with kind of perhaps the more economic answer to that. I think if anyone could actually predict when a recession would occur, that would be, I don't think no one totally knows that, but
no.
We have had a long run.
Okay, please continue, Mr. Carter.
So as an agency, we have four strategic priorities. Focusing on these priorities will ensure we have maximum impact on future economic growth and opportunity in Oregon. It is worth noting that these priorities have been influenced by the economic data I just presented, as well as initial findings that are both quantitative and qualitative coming out of our current strategic planning process. So the first strategic priority is to foster industry innovation and strong business growth. 95% of Oregon businesses employ fewer than 20 people. We are a small business state. business expansion is one of the most direct ways to ensure that ongoing economic opportunity. If Oregon is to continue to remain competitive, we need to create an environment where entrepreneurs are supported and resources are available to help them meaningfully scale.
Mr. Harder, is there within the executive branch a table set with agency heads where you all can talk together? I had a robust conversation with a regulatory agency this morning, and the perception of that agency is that it's not very pro-business. And while I left that conversation saying that I would get off this agency's case, I still am looking for that melding spot where the activities of one agency can profoundly inhibit and strangulate the activities of another. And I'm looking for some degree of reassurance that there is an acknowledgement in the executive branch that this juxtaposition of regulatory versus you pushing on the entrepreneurial side collide. Is there a referee to help work that out, to help smooth the ability of business to do what they do?
There are. So one of them, and Co-Chair Gomberg was part of it. The governor did convene a small business cabinet focused specifically on smaller businesses of how we can continue to provide support there. A key piece of what we looked at were regulatory issues. So that's one example of how the executive branch can convene. And that was mostly made up of actual business owners.
Let me interrupt you. Is there a report out from a work product from that committee?
Yes.
Okay.
We can share that.
Could you make that available to the professional staff here and disseminate it to the whole committee? Because I'm assuming that some of the recommendations within that have to do with infrastructure. I can recall having conversations with Representative Gomberg that when somebody sticks a shovel in that pipeline of information that goes down to the coast and runs computers and runs telephones and runs everything else, the coast's dead.
Yeah, that one worked. Focus particularly on access to capital, mentoring, and then regulatory. So we can share the kind of summary findings from that. The other place we do it is we convene as agency directors around topical issues. So just like there's a natural resource convening around those agencies, we also do that within the economic development and transportation sphere. So transportation, Business Oregon, DLCD, employment, ag, get together and talk about different issues related to the state. So that would be another way we do that.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Innovation, so still building off of the first strategic priority where it's both innovation and strong business growth. Innovation ensures that we are at the forefront of emerging industries. It is critical that Oregon remain a leader in investing in new technologies such as cross-laminated timber, composite material and advanced metals, or sensors for soil and water, all of which have urban and rural applications.
I'm going to interrupt you one more time while our colleague from Eastern Oregon is catching his breath and ask a question that I think he would ask, and that is, are you tracking bills inside your agency right now that you think would have a chilling effect on the ability of Oregon's businesses to flourish and do well? I'm thinking, for example, we were just discussing this earlier, about trying to get all of the permitting completed for an expansion of the dairy industry in Senator Hansel's district, and getting that off high center and allowing those jobs that have connectivity into my district, because some of those are good Tillamook cows that Boardman just borrowed. But my point is, are you tracking bills that you think would be inimical to business interests?
Yes. I don't know if I can speak to that particular bill right now, but Nick Batts, our government affairs director.
Nick, it's SB 197. Thank you.
Yes, we definitely pay attention to bills that are both the agency as well as the economic environment.
Thank you.
Our second strategic priority is to create quality employment opportunities for underserved people. As the previous slides have indicated, the benefits of Oregon's strong economy are not widely shared. Quality job growth is necessary to ensure opportunity for key underserved communities, such as rural, people of color, immigrants, or in many cases, our veterans. While the number of jobs we directly help create is an important metric, the quality of the jobs is an equally important consideration. With regards to our focus on quality job creation, location matters. We are focused on filling key locational gaps. 50 jobs paying $20 an hour in Hermiston could have a greater impact in that community than 250 jobs paying $35 an hour in the city of Portland, given their current economic conditions. And accessibility is also key. We must strive to identify job creation opportunities that pay family wage jobs, but do not solely rely on the workers having advanced degrees. We must be intentional about rebuilding middle-class job opportunities for historically disadvantaged populations. Our third strategic priority.
Mr. Harder, one more time. Sorry. Representative Gumberg.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. Thank you, Mr. Harder. I sincerely appreciate your comments about the impact on rural communities when jobs are created in those rural environments. But we need to talk for a moment about the availability of employees. Job-ready, motivated, qualified employees to fill the jobs that you're talking about. And I drive up and down Highway 101 and see help wanted signs everywhere. Talk to me about not only the challenge of creating jobs, but also the challenge of creating job-ready employees.
Yep. Go back one slide where we have workforce gaps. I think I gave an example around our high school graduation rate. That would just be one kind of metric you can look at around workforce gaps. I do know when you talk to businesses, the number one issue for their future competitiveness is access to talent, reliable talent with the right skills. So the link between economic development and workforce development is very real. Obviously, it's our job at Business Oregon to make sure the opportunities and the growth is occurring, but how we partner with our workforce development is equally important to make sure we match them with the right. So it's an issue out there. It is, if it's not the number one for business, it's in the top two or three. It's very important.
Thank you.
Senator Monroe.
And Measure 98's implementation should certainly assist with that.
Yes.
Something I've been very involved in because of my other role as education chair. So I'm looking forward to that workforce development, looking forward to improving our graduation requirements, allowing for more flexibility in terms of students that aren't necessarily heading for a four-year degree but are interested in getting CTE-type education and being ready for those family wage jobs.
Career technical education is a key component to helping us rebuild the middle wage, middle class type jobs. So I agree.
Representative Reardon, please.
Just a real quick one. I don't want to give away all my secrets, but we should talk soon about some thoughts because I am working on this very issue of workforce as it relates to economic growth. So I'd love to chat with you about that. Thank you, Chair. Co-chair.
While you two are chatting about that, it causes me to think about we sort of have the issue du jour in this building, and right now workforce, it looms large. Are you aware of, or does your agency track all of the different programs that are doing workforce? Just to make sure that they know of each other's existence, that they're complementary, and that they can derive value from each other. The reason I bring this up is that some of the people from the Boeing project that I've been working on are going to be visiting a career technical program in Salem later this week that has many of the earmarks of best in show. I mean, it's apparently a very well-run, very well-received program. and to try to see those points of connectivity among our various districts to see how we can complement and help each other and advance the notion of career technical rather than building all of these disparate programs that in some cases replicate each other. Mm-hmm. Everybody got all carried away on doing career education and community colleges for the turbines in the gorge. You can only have so many of those programs, and we have a tendency to do pretty thin rather than spires of excellence. And are you guys the traffic cop to see what of these programs are duplicative or could be more complementary if they knew of each other's existence?
I don't know if we're the traffic cop on it. I think certainly staff are aware, and if we get to it today, we're going to have a chance to hear about our regional development teams. These are the folks who work out in regions on business development projects. They are certainly aware of the workforce kind of partners and resources within their region because they can be very regionally focused. So I think they would probably have a better understanding. We know about them because our its ability for us to match employers with those resources. I'm not sure we're the correct agency to play traffic cop on whether there's duplication or not.
So Representative Reed.
Thank you, Co-Chair. I have a lot of information that I could share with you on this. I think we're trying to set up a meeting that I think would really help answer that question where we are, where I'm going as chair of the Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee. And it's more than, you know, we can dump on this committee right today, but
okay.
There's a lot going on that we need to share.
Cool. Please continue, Mr. Hart.
Okay. Strategic priority number three is invest in rural communities to enable economic prosperity. Many rural communities lack traditional infrastructure, such as water, wastewater systems, industrial land, or even workforce housing to support growth. And most lack 21st century infrastructure, such as broadband, community buildings to support local arts and culture, or affordable spaces to incubate startups and entrepreneurs. Investments in infrastructure help create a foundation for improved quality of life, community livability, and long-term industry competitiveness. And finally, our fourth priority is to lead statewide economic initiatives. As the state's economic development agency, we are asked to lead projects of statewide significance. In some cases, we assume a convener role, such as our current effort to attract Outdoor Retailer, the world's largest outdoor recreation trade show, to Oregon. We also serve as a funder or project manager on key initiatives, such as our recent role leading the development of the state's 10-year food and beverage industry roadmap. Every day we work with local communities, businesses, and industry. What we learn from them can impact policy at the highest level. We will work to convene stakeholders to align private sector, community, and institutional interests on economic, business, and workforce issues. Our strategic priorities provide insight into where we intend to focus our investments going forward. To understand Business Oregon as an agency, it's also helpful to understand how we carry out these priorities. Industry targeting is one approach we use to maximize the impact of our programs and services. Growing Oregon's traded sector industries are at the heart of what Business Oregon does. Traded sector industries are those that sell their goods and services outside the Oregon market. And while Business Oregon works across all sectors, we do prioritize certain industry groups in Oregon that have a distinct competitive advantage, those that provide unique opportunities for growth, well-paying jobs, innovation, and statewide prosperity. On the slide is a list of our current target industries. We regularly conduct a thorough analysis and update our target industry sectors, which occurred last summer.
Mr. Harder, when you are sort of cycling targeted industries through, do you make any effort to contact those that were in this list and maybe aren't now? Is there any outreach to them? I'm thinking specifically, it just jumps out at me because of my background, but at one point, aviation and heavy lift helicopters were a part of this. When do they get the word that they're no longer on the chosen list?
We do. I think we would, just for transparency, we would include some of the work that they do in within advanced kind of manufacturing. Some of these are pretty broad buckets.
Okay.
The one that is not up here that we had some inquiries about is, where does clean technology show up? I thought we were a leader in clean technology. The way we looked at it, in the way kind of economic data presents itself, is there is no such thing as a clean technology industry. It shows up within many industries. So we still focus on clean technology. We just do it through other kind of target industries that we work with.
Thank you. That's very helpful, because you could see clean tech in high tech or in some cases in business services.
Yeah, so. Well, forestry and wood products, CLT is a very green product. It shows up in many different places.
Yep. Representative Reardon.
Sorry. Madam Co-Chair. Mr. Harder, why isn't healthcare on here? I'm just curious. Healthcare is one of our biggest industries in the state. Are they just doing so well already, or?
So where we focus, certainly from the business development side, is on the traded sector component of it. Mm-hmm. So healthcare is an industry that provides probably the most number of middle wage jobs. Those aren't necessarily traded sector jobs.
Yeah.
Where we would interface around healthcare would probably be in our high tech and biotechnology type of work. So that is a distinction we make at Business Oregon, or at least where we focus on the traded sector side.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Please continue.
To ensure maximum impact, it is also critical that we are an efficient. Let me go back one. Another way to ensure maximum impact is to focus regionally. Oregon is not a single homogeneous economy, but a collection of unique regions, each with their own challenges, opportunities, and resources. A one-size-fits-all approach will not work, and as the state's economic development agency, we think and act regionally. We employ staff who live and work in each of the regions you see on the screen, and in partnership with local and regional stakeholders, Business Oregon makes investments in local businesses, communities, and people that in turn grow our regional economies. And to ensure maximum impact, it is also critical that we are an efficient agency. Recently, the organization made investments in management decisions to improve service delivery and update our internal processes. Examples include the implementation of lean process improvements within our infrastructure, finance, and small business certification teams. We are looking at similar tools agency-wide. We've updated our evaluation process related to business incentives and loans. So, for example, we have a new strategic reserve fund approval process that improves our risk analysis, while at the same time improves decision-making feedback to business. We've invested in a new customer relationship management tool to better manage customer contacts and improve the reporting of our work. And as mentioned previously, we rolled out a new organizational structure to streamline service delivery, eliminate silos, and improve management to staff ratios. One way we communicate the impact of our work is through key performance measures. The next several slides highlight some of the formal metrics we report on to the legislature. Jobs created and retained, tax revenues generated, and sales serve as measures of success related to our business development role. As the slide suggests, we are either at or above our targets. So what does this look like? One example is the Face Rock Creamery in Bandon. The South Coast cheesemaker opened in 2013, and its award-winning cheeses are now found in more than 3,000 locations in 7 states. Business Oregon was there from the start, where we provided a $250,000 loan to help finance the construction of a $2.2 million, 80,000 square foot manufacturing and retail facility. The company has since doubled its workforce to 40 employees.
The committee would like to know where the cheese samples are.
Phase 2.
Does it make ice cream? That's what I
Industrial development, capital planning, and health safety projects are foundational to our role in investing in rural communities. On the slide, you can see some of the key metrics we track under those bodies of work.
Mr. Harder, yeah. I'm going to ask you to go back to that other slide for just a second. The industrial site certification, I've been around this issue for a long time. I'm not sure I understand it. What's the current status of how these projects work to be certified project ready? Whose burden is it to bring the land forward? Who deems its project readiness? Who pays to clear liens or to do wetland delineations? Who plays in this space? And how then are the sites tracked and made available to site selectors or others who might be looking at Oregon and want to engage in one of our industrially certified sites?
I'll give an answer, and if it's not detailed enough, we'll have folks maybe today or later in the presentation that will talk about some of these programs. We have two programs, regionally significant industrial areas and regionally significant industrial sites. Communities under both of those programs bring them to Business Oregon, Department of Transportation, state lands, and DLCD for consideration as industrial sites, and then collectively we make a determination on them. That's really a determination. That doesn't mean they're necessarily site ready, but those programs then kind of signify to our agencies that these are priorities to move forward down from a site ready process. Your questions about exactly on liens and all that, I don't know if I have the answer with me today, but I can get you that answer.
I just picked that out as an example, but as long as you've touched on ODOT, it strikes me that one of the things that has been an impediment to getting some of these sites ready to go for business is ingress and egress. Mm-hmm. And so at the point that the group of agencies that you ticked off, ODOT, DLCD, you guys, and...
State lands.
Okay. Would say, yes, this is a regionally significant site, is that de facto an acknowledgement that those agencies will do whatever is necessary to try to get the site ready for development? Who gets the lion, you know, the chair and the whip, the lion tamer, to get ODOT to agree on ingress and egress?
What it does is it signifies it as a priority for us to work through those issues. I don't know. Each agency has processes related to industrial sites. What it does is it brings it up to the top for us to work through those issues.
Okay. Senator Hanson.
Thank you. Mr. Harder, my question is, how do you, or do you, when you've got private development ready next to, say, a city-owned lot, is there any way you treat everybody equally? I hope you do, but I know sometimes the private sector, with their land that's ready to go, they feel that they're disadvantaged because they tend to be the city's in competition with them to site locations. I've got a situation like that in my district. How do you handle that?
I don't know if I know the answer to that specific question. I think, you know, our purpose is to make sure industrial land is available. How we balance that between public and private land, I'll have to get you the answer back on that. I don't know if I, or talk to some of my colleagues who know the answer to that.
Thank you.
Yes. So an example of our infrastructure work is Baker City's drinking water system improvements. Baker City residents recently fell ill due to cryptosporidium in their drinking water. Business Oregon provided $2 million worth of loans and grants to help the community complete a new water treatment plant that uses ultraviolet light to kill dangerous parasites.
Would it be safe to say that when you advance that grant that it comes with some conditions, like let's have a maintenance fund so you can keep up this new investment, or talk a little bit about, maybe that's an issue area, subject matter expert would need to come up and talk about, but I think some of us are interested in knowing what disciplines you're imposing on Baker City and similarly situated cities who are getting this huge investment in a better drinking water. How do they take care of it, or what are the requirements?
Right. We will be discussing. So that money came from our Safe Drinking Water Loan and Grant Program, and we'll be walking through kind of the details of those programs maybe today, if not tomorrow.
And I'm looking over your shoulder at Mr. Cummings, who's writing this down. So, okay. Please continue.
In addition to the formal metrics that we report on to the legislature, we also produce a quarterly pipeline report for our team and the Oregon Business Development Commission. On this slide are a couple infographics I pulled from the latest quarterly report focused on our regional development team. The bar graph are the active projects that we have in each region and what industry that those businesses are a part of. And the other tracks company visits and how many of the companies report being expanding, stable, downsizing, or at risk. I'll make one point of clarification for those of you looking at the document we sent out last week. The number in the pie chart says 106. That's been corrected on the screen. It's actually 241. So the pipeline is much larger than we had put in the presentation. Both of these are helpful at looking at our pipeline of future projects and investments. And of course, not every project in our pipeline comes to fruition, but you can see the health of the types of projects we're working on. And similarly, this graph shows our infrastructure finance pipeline by program and their reach around the state. Infrastructure improvements are needed in every community. Currently, our pipeline has 138 projects, earmarking about $160 million in funding, and in 34 of the 36 counties. So with that is the conclusion of our high-level agency overview. As a reminder, and some of your questions I think we'll be able to answer over the next 4 days, we will be going into depth on our programs and services following. If it's okay, I'd like to, if there's any more questions, I do have colleagues who can come up and provide our budget overview.
Colleagues, as we are changing presenters, anybody else have any questions of Mr. Harder? Mr. Harder, bring on the next panel.
All right. So I'd like to invite up two of my colleagues, Ramona Rademacher, who is Assistant Director for Operations and Finance, and Jenny Wilfong, who is our Chief Financial Officer, to provide our budget overview.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Johnson, Gomber, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ramona Rademacher. I'm the Assistant Director for Operations and Finance for Budget Oregon. I'm here today with Jenny Wilfong, our Chief Financial Officer. In the budget overview, Jenny's going to start us out by providing an overview of our budget and how it is structured. At that point, I will provide conclusion for the budget overview section and go over our policy option packages, the impacts of potential reduction options, as well as our agency bills.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Senator Johnson, Co-Chair Gomberg, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Wilfong, as Ramona has already said. The Chief Financial Officer for Business Oregon. I'm going to start today by going over at a more high level our budget in the governor's budget, and then I will go into more detail related to funding. So potentially after these next two slides, the slides after that may answer your questions in, as I go into more detail. Business Oregon's 2017-19 governor's budget by division or function area, totaling $1.039 billion, 136 positions. We have 134 FTE. I will start with the largest portion of our budget, which is represented in blue. It's the infrastructure programs. As you can see, it is the largest area, largest portion of our budget, and the majority of this is made up by bonding proceeds and revolving loan funds. The next area of our budget is the business programs, represented in green. They are 21% of our entire budget, which focuses on supporting and promoting business retention, growth, and job creation and retention. The next area in our budget is related to debt service in yellow. This represents 10% of our entire budget, and this includes both principal and interest payments on past lottery and general obligation bond issuances, such as the seismic retrofit program, the regional solutions, special public works, to name a few. The final three areas of our budget make up the last 2%, and that would be arts and culture, operations, and film and video. While Business Oregon's budget size is substantial, I wanted to put it into perspective. Comparatively speaking, our entire budget is around 1% of the state of Oregon's 2017-19 governor's budget holistically. As well, just speaking related to lottery and general fund, our budget is less than 1% of the state's entire lottery and general funding.
Question.
Senator Hansel.
Was film and video so small it didn't get a piece of the pie? I don't see any red.
Yes, it should be right by the black area, that it didn't quite show up on there.
Yes is the answer to your question.
Yes. This next circle graph.
Let me just stop you, Ms. Wilfong, because
yes,
while we're being somewhat jocular about this, this is actually pretty important. This shows the percentage of your budget by function. It does not, colleagues, represent the multiplier effect that film and video has had.
Right.
The loss of Grimm, I think all of us are feeling, and I understand they're going to be auctioning off, or at least I think they're going to be auctioning off all the props and the costumes and the rest of that.
Well, Madam Co-Chair, except that they're not allowed to say what the name of the program is.
Exactly, but that's, they have to kill you if they tell you. But the point of the story is that this just depicts their spot in your budget. And should not be seen as a reflection on the merits of the program or the economic multiplier that film and video actually is. And I just want to be clear about that.
Good point.
Okay.
Co-Chair Johnson, yes, completely agree. This circle graph breaks up our total $1.039 billion budget by fund type. I mean, this is kind of the high level related to fund type. I will get into each fund type after this slide. The dark green and light green areas of the circle, equaling $827.7 million, represent our other funding, which make up 79% of our entire budget. The dark green area represents only new and phased in general obligation, lottery, and revenue bonding. The next area, the light green, represents all of the other fund budget that is not bonding related. And I will talk in greater detail about our other funding, so if you have any questions, hopefully it will be answered there related to other funds. Moving on to lottery funds, totaling $110.5 million in blue. This is 11% of our entire budget. The orange represents $60.5 million in general fund, which is about 6% of our budget. And this is largely debt service. Lastly, in red, $41 million of our budget is derived from federal funding. We currently support 5 federal grant programs that I will also go into a little bit more detail about in a future slide.
Representative Gumper.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. This seems an opportune time to ask a question, which I hope you've anticipated. If you hadn't, then let the word go forth to anybody who's going to be coming to this committee that I'll be asking this question.
Let me guess.
I'm looking at your current accounts receivable and delinquent debt, and I'm seeing roughly $2 million, a little bit down from where it was last year, and I congratulate you on that. But what do you have to do to owe your agency money? I see about 34 accounts. They're roughly $60,000 apiece. Give me a couple of examples of the kind of people that would owe you that kind of money.
Co-Chair Johnson Gomberg, members of the committee, John Saris is actually going to cover that subject, as well as all of our business finance programs, either the end of today or beginning tomorrow, and he will fully answer that question for you.
All right. Well, I'll put him on notice. Another Correct. Question I'm going to have is the amount of debt that was written off this last year, and I'll be asking about that $200,000 as well. So we'll look forward to that. Thank you.
Okay. Within the next 5 slides, I will go into some more specific detail related to our funding types. Beginning with general fund, within the governor's budget for Business Oregon totaling $60.5 million. It is important to note that the majority of this is related to general obligation bonding debt service, primarily for the seismic retrofit program. The governor's budget includes $9.7 million general fund debt service specifically to support an early issuance of the seismic geo bonds in spring of 2018, as the LFO report also states. The remaining 17%, or $10.2 million, of our general fund is for the operation and programming, specifically related to the Arts Commission, the Solar Incentive Program, and the Small Scale Energy Loan Program, all of which you will hear a lot more about within this budget overview, as well as in the coming days and program presentations. The agency receives $110.5 million in lottery funds. The lottery funding to Business Oregon comes from the Economic Development Fund. A little more than half of this lottery funding is used for programs, general operation of some of those programs. And the remaining 46% is specifically dedicated for principal and interest payments on prior issued lottery bonds.
And Ms. Wilfong, given that we cannot not pay debt service, of the 59%, how much of that is going to be impacted by, say, the passage of outdoor school?
That number specifically takes into account outdoor school, as well as the measure for the veterans.
Okay, so this represents current law, current status of those?
It does, yes.
Okay. Question.
Senator Hansel.
Do you track over the years how much of your budget has actually, and the amount, I guess, the volume that has come from lottery? I know when we first passed it, it was, I think, designated for economic development. So has that been on a downward glide, or are we consistent? What does that look like?
Co-Chair Senator Hansel, I would assume that over time the department does have something historically. I myself have not looked at at that metric specifically. Just the prior biennia and coming into this new biennia and what the agency request was, and now the reduction that the department is experiencing in the governor's budget, which lottery and general fund together is $8.7 million.
I can answer a bit of that. I don't know if this is the question you're answering. I believe we're about 15% of lottery at the moment.
Okay.
Follow.
So, but what you get out of the lottery is dependent upon what the governor's budget preparation assigns to you.
Yes.
Okay.
Correct. I can follow up with more information if you'd like.
Well, what's helpful to me is that there is more at play than just other demands on the lottery funds itself, because it's also what the governor is willing to put into their budget for you. There may be more available, but priorities are some other place.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
I wanted to provide a bit more detail related to our lottery funding that we receive and how it is used. As I mentioned, 46% of our total $110.5 million received in lottery funding is used for debt service. $39.2 million is used for investments and incentives such as Oregon Inc., Small Business Assistance Programs, Rural Opportunity Initiative, and Strategic Reserve Fund, to name some examples. Third is a $19.2 million, which covers operating expenses related to our programs, such as funding regional development officers, specific program specialists, and some general operations within the agency. Lastly, but not least, is Film and Video, who receive a little over $1 million in lottery funding. And this funding is for administration of the office to create and maintain public-private partnerships in the local film and television industries. You'll remember a few slides back, I had talked about the light and dark green areas, which made up the majority of the circle chart. Other funds are our primary fund type at 79% of our entire budget, totaling $827.7 million. This slide breaks out our other funds into a little more detail, starting with $444.9 million relating to general obligation bonding proceeds, mostly to do with the seismic retrofit program. About $200 million are new seismic bonding that is within our agency POP 105 that you will hear more about in our budget overview. A little over $187 million is specific to seismic bonding proceeds phased in from the current biennium, the 15-17 biennium. $55 million are specific to the small-scale energy loan program. The second largest other fund budget...
May I stop you long enough? I don't know who the issue expert will be presenting on the small energy loan program, but I'd like a little more detail about that. As I understand it, that program is broke, unlikely to make future loans. And my concern is that I believe the governor's budget dumps that project on you, or that program on you guys, And I'm, in case the tone of my question doesn't isn't obvious enough, I'm pretty concerned about sticking you guys with a loser. So I'd like a little more detail on that, please.
Ramona will be walking through that in her presentation next.
Okay. I can speak to it now if you'd like, or
let Ms. Wolfong, if you don't mind, finish her presentation, and then we can hear about what a great idea and how brilliantly run SELP was. Ms. Wolfong, please continue.
Yes. The second largest other fund budget portion of $156.3 million are revolving loan funds as well as loan repayments. Our budget here supports expenditures of our loan funding mechanisms such as the Special Public Works Fund, water, wastewater, as well as repayment of loans throughout the biennium. The third largest portion of our other funds budget are lottery and revenue bond proceeds of $110.8 million. The new lottery bonding within the governor's budget is as follows. $11 million for regional solutions, $10 million for the Portland Harbor Superfund transferred from the Department of Environmental Quality.
And I'm going to stop you there and make a request to the professional staff. Because we operate on a committee basis, not all of us are privy to all of the information all of the time. And I have been very eager to see a total Oregon State budget for the harbor cleanup, particularly because the draft record of decision was one thing, and the scope has changed dramatically. It's going to be a much longer project, much more expensive. And I'm trying to find out what's the whole budget. We're seeing a little nibble of it here, but I'm sure there is budget requests in the Attorney General's budget. There's probably staff work at the DOJ. There undoubtedly is DSL, DEQ. I'd like to try to get a handle on how much money, if for no other reason than to let Oregonians know how breathtakingly expensive that undertaking is going to be. And in my opinion, and this has nothing to do with anything other than this, the record of decision is so far away from the draft. And I just think Oregonians need to know how much this is going to cost. Representative Rudin.
Co-Chair Johnson, is it possible to reach down into local jurisdictions if we do that kind of research and see the impact on the locals as well?
I leave that answer to Mr. Bender to the degree that they'll tell us.
Yeah.
We'll try to get some information together for the subcommittee.
Good.
Yeah, because I would think you would have the port, you would have the city, and you'd have Multnomah County. Mm-hmm. Yep. I think the representative's question is good.
Good. This is going to be a multiple billion-dollar project, and I just would like to see it all in one place, how much we're going to be forking over, particularly given the aggressive new record of decision. Okay, please continue, Ms. Wolfong.
$50.8 million is for the Special Public Works Fund recapitalization and levy inspection and repairs. $30 million is for direct revenue bonding from the Economic Development Bond Bank. The remaining budget in this specific area are specific to phased-in proceeds from the current 1517 biennium. The next is debt service, which is $100.5 million of the other fund budget. The majority of this is related to the small-scale loan, energy loan program, and $37 million of that is related to infrastructure revolving loan funds, principal and interest payments. And finally, the remaining $15.2 million, or 1.8% of our other fund budget, is related to programming such as the Oregon Cultural Trust, who receive $8 to $9 million in donations and other revenues. The Certification Office of Business and Diversity, who charge assessments to agencies for their services, and other private grants such as the Ford Family Foundation for the Arts Commission.
Question. Senator Hansel.
Under that lottery revenue bond proceeds, you listed a number of different portions of that. And one of them struck my attention in particular was levy retrofits and stuff like that. My question is, those that fall under that category, does this department maintain the authority, the oversight, the overview, the choosing all the different components of that program, or do you share that with another state agency, or are you just a pass-through on some? What I'm assuming, because it's a part of your budget, that you have control over from A to Z, but I want to make sure.
Senator Hansel, some yes, some no. The Special Public Works Fund, yes, that is within our agency, and my colleagues will be speaking to those programs specifically and give you more information on the selection criteria and what we inspect and all of that. The Regional Solutions, we are a partner related to Regional Solutions with the governor's office, and then the $10 million for the Portland Harbor Superfund would be the fiscal agent. So we would be playing a role, but not in specific decision making. And Ramona will speak to that in more detail.
Senator, if you'll allow me, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think what you're asking, certainly what I'm asking, is for those of us that have districts that have huge levee and diking and tide gate and other water management issues and problems, to be reassured that there's a process that allows there to be competition for these funds, because there aren't enough. $10 million barely scratches the surface of what we need to do. And colleagues, just to put this in perspective, Portland International and all of the growth near Portland International is behind the protection of a levee. Was something bad to happen to that, were something bad to happen, we'd be in a world of economic hurt. So given that the federal government is a faithless partner and broke their word on taking care of levies, we don't have nearly enough. But I think some reassurance that we have a process that is equitable, that makes sure that projects that are ready to go get consideration, that all of the money doesn't get pulled off into the Portland metro area. Those are the sorts of assurances in the project delivery that I think some of us are looking for.
Absolutely.
Did I put too many words in your mouth?
No, you did great.
Co-Chair Johnson, Chris Cummings, our Assistant Director for Economic Development, and Ed Tabor, who helps manage our infrastructure programs, can walk through kind of the criteria for each of those programs. I know they're prepared to do that.
Okay. Please, Ms. Wilfong, continue.
This last slide related to funding specifically relates to our federal funding. In the 17-18 governor's budget of $41 million. Business Oregon administers 5 federal grant programs, all of which are listed here. All of these grant programs will be covered in greater detail in the program areas of our presentation. And so if there are no other questions of me at this time, I will turn it over to Ramona to go through our budget drivers, additions, and reductions to our budget.
Any questions of Ms. Wilfong? I just have one, and maybe Ms. Rodemaker is going to cover this. Do you know that these 5 grant programs from the federal government will continue given the change of administration? Has anything given you any pause about the longevity of these?
We do not have any concrete facts related to a reduction in this funding. We are, however, concerned about our federal funding overall, just in not knowing what that's going to look like. But we are staying on top of any new information. We'll be following up.
Good afternoon, Ms. Rodemaker.
Good afternoon, co-chairs Johnson, Gomberg, members of the committee. The next slide really shows you that in the governor's recommended budget coming up, that Business Oregon's budget grows by a significant amount. It increases by $342 million, or 49%. This is primarily due to the addition of new programs and responsibilities being added to Business Oregon, and also some of the program expansions that you've heard about to date. Most of the growth that occurs in our budget occurs in the infrastructure and in the debt service areas. In those two areas, the largest driver is the seismic program, which is one of our policy option packages. This is an expansion of the efforts that we've been working on this biennium, and it's an increase of $202 million in tax-exempt general obligation bonds. And basically, the point of this package is so we can make additional investments in seismic retrofitting of schools and emergency service buildings. The second area in the infrastructure and debt service that you'll see growth in our budget is in the Special Public Works Fund. This is also a policy option package for lottery bonds for $50.8 million in other funds. And as Jenny said, it seeks to recapitalize the fund using $40 million of that amount to fund municipal infrastructure projects and $10 million for levy, inspection, and repair. Our Special Public Works Fund is other fund that we use to match federal grants, provide grants to projects, and to support infrastructure programs and operations. And third in the infrastructure area is an increase of $11 million in lottery bonds for regional solutions projects. This is the team that's led by the governor's office, and they work to identify local economic development opportunities and needs and to rally resources and staff to create a plan to meet those needs. And as I said, this would be $11 million in new lottery bonds. There's an additional $500,000 in the governor's recommended budget to continue funding of the Regional Accelerator and Information Network, which originated as a regional solutions project as well. Moving on to the business programs, that's where you'll see that's our second biggest area of growth. And that area grows primarily because of the transfer of the small-scale energy loan program from the Department of Energy to Business Oregon. And that program comes over equaling $119.6 million in other funds. And I'll go over some additional details about that program in a moment. And lastly, there's another transfer happening in the business program area, and that's the $10 million in lottery bond proceeds being transferred from the Department of Environmental Quality for the Portland Harbor cleanup, the Superfund project we discussed a moment ago. It's important to note that the growth in these programs is occurring simultaneously with the reduction of $8.7 million in lottery fund and general fund in the governor's recommended budget. And so while we are receiving new responsibilities and programs, when you look at that 12% reduction to the department, most of that occurs in our operations and in our management and our ability to provide general support to all of the department. And so it's an interesting juxtaposition of trying to manage these new responsibilities with fewer resources.
Colleagues, I want to make sure that we put a fine point on this. This is the governor's budget sends to Oregon Business Development Department a number of things that are outside of their general portfolio. For example, this small energy loan program
that was pretty maladroitly handled, and now they take it out of energy and they send it over here after it's already a mess. And the amount of money that's involved here is the tip of the iceberg. Ms. Rodemaker, what, this is about a $20 million problem that you're getting a little sliver of?
The small-scale energy loan program is actually one of the programs that we inherit. It is a transfer from the Department of Energy, and it's being transferred. It's supported by the governor, and it was also recommended by the Joint Interim Committee on the Department of Energy Oversight to move to our department. Their point was to maintain the original purpose of the program. The way in which it's being transferred because of some of the budget conditions is going to, and the way in which we will need to manage it will be significantly different than its original purpose.
Yeah, the treasurer said they're not going to make any more loans, right?
Basically, it comes to us with a, the program as it existed in Department of Energy had 8 positions assigned to it. It's being transferred with 3 positions, and I believe that how that's intended to work out is that it really puts it on a maintenance schedule for a while. We manage the existing portfolio of loans, but because it comes to us with a forecasted deficit of $16 million, and that's due to about $33 million in loan defaults that occurred previously, we will need to manage it differently. We're statutorily required to have adequate cash flow in the fund, in the bond sinking fund, to meet debt obligations before we're allowed to create new loans. And so while we don't expect that shortfall to occur this biennium, we do anticipate that it'll begin to occur in the next biennium in the year 2020. And so in this particular budget, the governor's recommended budget actually proposes to give us $2 million in new general funds as a down payment towards paying off this deficit.
That's like tying a pork chop around your neck so the dog will play with you. This is a giant loser program, and I would like to award Ms. Rodemaker the Oscar for diplomacy, but this is the governor's recommended budget, colleagues. We don't have to necessarily go along with saddling this nimble little agency with a proven loser. So,
Chris, I have two. Do they get then in the Department of Energy presentation of wherever, whatever committee that goes before, we've cut our budget $16 million, all they've done is transferred it to another?
I'll defer that answer to the professional staff.
There is a reduction or elimination of the CELP program in the governor's recommended budget for the Department of Energy, where it currently resides. It is not a one-to-one offset, however. Specifically in the Department of Energy did not use general fund to administer that program. The administrative costs were generated from the loan program itself as other funds. So there are other funds reductions in the Department of Energy's budget. Here, the governor is proposing using general fund to pay for administrative costs after the program is transferred. So, yes, there is a reduction, but it's not the mirror image of what you see here for the Department for OBDD.
This is the consolation prize for taking a dog. Go ahead, Ms. Rodemaker.
We obviously support the governor's recommended budget, and it's also important to note that there was an interim legislative committee that also made this recommendation. But at the same time, as this is transferred, we want to be clear about expectations moving forward. And so it's important to note that while it's not going to require that infusion of cash this biennium, we will need to be coming back regularly until, I believe it's 2034, in order to cover that ongoing deficit. And these are constitutionally backed general obligation bonds. And so basically there is general fund guarantee guaranteed to cover this deficit. And so it's not a short-term issue. It's something that you'll continue to hear about into the future. And so we just want to make sure that as it transfers, even though the recommendation was to continue to operate the program as it exists now, that we make it clear that we're probably not going to be able to do that. As I said, it's coming over with fewer resources to be able to do that, but we're not going to be able to be making new loans, especially not initially. And instead, it's our intent, and what we have in the budget are some operation funds to perform a market analysis to really assess what the demand is for this program so that we can help to define what next steps are moving forward.
Colleagues, any questions? Thank you for your diplomacy. Let's actually stop here. I'm going to exercise the prerogative of the chair. We've got 5 minutes. You're starting a new description. Can you do this one in 5 minutes?
Absolutely.
Go ahead then.
The next addition is $10 million in lottery bond proceeds transferred from the Department of Environmental Quality for the Portland Harbor cleanup. This was designated as a Superfund site in the year 2000, and it has many partners and many moving pieces. The governor's recommended budget assigns us the role of fiscal agent, and that's basically so the Department of Environmental Quality can perform its regulatory functions by basically going in and assessing the extent of the damage to the river, as well as responsible parties and fiscal responsibility for those parties. It's our understanding that the Department of Environmental Quality and the Governor's Office will continue to manage this project, but we'll manage the money acting as the fiscal agent.
You raise an interesting legal question about whether or not transferring the responsibilities for the fiscal agent from DEQ to you absolves them of any conflict. The state of Oregon is, as I understand it, a potentially responsible party. And this isn't for you to answer because you're not an expert in DEQ matters, but I wonder how this cleans up their conflict. They just don't handle the money, but they're still a regulatory agency, and we're a potentially responsible party.
Co-Chair Johnson, I'm not an expert in the Portland Cleanup Harbor Project. My understanding is that they just want to make sure that the role as DEQ is negotiating whose responsibility is what is unencumbered by having to then turn around and manage the money and also act as the collection agent and things like that. So I really do think that they're asking us to be the banker on this project so that DEQ can focus in on what the actual issues at hand are.
And how many extra people is the governor recommending you get to do this? Because in order to discharge your fiscal responsibility as the agent, you're going to have somebody make sure the numbers are all correct. Do you get extra resources with this, or is this just more duties as assigned?
Co-Chair Johnson, there's no positions or FT associated with this budget item.
Colleagues, it's a lot of responsibility, again, dumped on OBDD without a lot of support. I just think we ought to keep that in mind as we begin to work through the rest of this budget. I am going to exercise the prerogative of the chair at this point, Ms. Rademacher, before we start on regional solutions. Colleagues, any questions up to this point? Okay, thank you for a very comprehensive start to your 4 days with us. Mr. Bender, anything for the good of the order?
No, they will be continuing tomorrow.
Okay, we'll see you same time, same place tomorrow. We're adjourned.